Welcome to another edition of the Habs Fan vs. Leafs Fan Hockey Translator, where we take actual players and coaches' quotes and tell you what they really mean. We now take you live to Lou Lamoriello speaking about the current state and progress of the Toronto Maple Leafs. And now Lou Lamoriello speaks about how good William Nylander can be.
When I talk about our young forwards, I talk about the five young forwards that we have up front.
But what he really meant was,
William is a very, very pretty, charismatic, handsome kid. I mean, this guy has girlfriends. You should see some of the girlfriends this guy has.
On the importance of Mitch Marner.
Mitch is an extremely important part of our team. There is no question about that.
But what he really meant was,
I've got to figure out how to feed this kid. Because when I was young, and my dear grandmother made me cannolis, I didn't leave a single one on the table.
And now Lou Lamoriello speaks on the development and growth of Nazem Kadri.
We've all spent time with him, and he needed some guidance.
But what he really meant was,
look, I love the Lebanese wonder as much as the next guy. But there are some real concerns about the flipping and the flopping and the this and the that. I just want to see Naz grow to be a proud Toronto Maple Leafs player on a limited contract that's completely controllable by this organization. Is there really anything wrong with that? Sometimes watching Lou Lamoriello is like watching some kind of, you know, National Geographic Animal Kingdom study. That guy yesterday in the game, especially when they did that shot with our friend Shanahan having his little cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
Man, oh man, Lou just looks like he's got the same expression. I don't even know if he knows where he is sometimes.
I just think a man who's won three Stanley Cups, he's probably just not impressed with the regular season. He's just like, I'm going to wait for the real deal to come along.
You know what? That's so true. I was just thinking that as well. I was thinking, I'm wondering what turns him on from a hockey perspective, right? Because, I mean, he's pretty much done it all. He's won it all. He's seen it all. He's negotiated contracts with all the widest range of players. Like, what gets that guy out of bed in the morning?
What gets him up in the morning? I guess just the challenge to win.
Yeah,
he's a competitive man,
Well, you know, it's funny that being a competitive guy, we had a chance to speak with Andrew Berkshire. In fact, we're going to have him on later, and I can't wait. I almost feel like the longer you and I record this banter, the longer the fans are saying, when will these guys shut up? Especially that Habs fan. And I say to myself, after speaking with Andrew, there's no question in my mind that Lou Lamoriello might be exactly the kind of guy who decides to go for it, because he's not a spring chicken. He's almost 80 years old.
Yeah, he is almost 80 years old. And what was he originally signed by Shannon for, I think, only 2 years, and I believe that it's been extended. So yeah, he did witness a very big victory over the Los Angeles Kings, thus showing again the trend that the Maple Leafs are having, because just last year, the Leafs were destroyed by the LA Kings, and now here they are this year after being beaten by the Capitals in the playoffs. They've already beaten the Capitals. After being destroyed by the LA Kings 7-0 last year, they've now redeemed themselves by beating the Kings last night 3-1. So there's a lot of good trending upwards, you know, for the Toronto Maple Leafs. So whereas the Montreal Canadiens, things couldn't be further from being opposite.
How humiliating it must be for an athlete the caliber of Carey Price. He's got his pride, and he holds his emotions in check better than anyone. Like, as you like to say, he's a poise master. But man, oh man, your heart had to break when you saw him using his stick as a flail and basically losing his cool.
No, actually, my heart didn't break when I saw him losing his cool and breaking his stick. I actually was glad, and I think I either tweeted it or sent a message or something, glad to see Carey showing some emotion and some anger.
And she's angry!
Because, I mean,
I'm angry.
This is just the first, because this is a streak that the Montreal Canadiens haven't gone through in, like, 70 years. And for him to be cool about it, obviously he's not responsible for the previous 70 years, but for him to be cool about it wouldn't, I don't think resonate well with the team and the fan base. They need to show that they actually care that they're losing, because it was a little too nonplussed about everything that was going on, saying it was early, you know, before it was just preseason, now it was just early and whatever. They need to get serious now, and I think Carey smashing a stick is a good sign, and I think it's a good sign leading into tonight's game.
Well, and I'm wondering how much credence you give to the whole survivability of Bergevin, knowing that last, I think, what is it, four GMs were fired during the course of the season. So it's not like decisions are going to be made after the fact, right? If this thing continues, he's as good as being on the chopping block.
Yeah, and, you know, conventional wisdom is you wait till the end of the season to fire a general manager, but the way things Montreal has been doing things is that they have been quite unconventional in all of their moves, it seems, whether it being hiring a coach and not firing the assistant staff at all, you know, not going forward with a center, instead putting a winger at that position with Jonathan Drouin, you know, the farm team not really developing players and still keeping on that staff. So there's a lot of unconventional moves that the Canadiens are making, so maybe, and actually personally I hope they are unconventional and do get rid of Marc Bergevin, because I just don't know if I can see him turning this thing around. And now the rumors that are coming about with the New York Rangers for Alex Galchenyuk either being Chris Kreider or Matt Zuccarello, that concerns me. And so does the rumors of Alex Galchenyuk going to Pittsburgh also concern me.
Well, it seems like your team's crusade against purging themselves of as many Russian players as possible continues unabated. I mean, seriously, like, at some point when you look at the last, what was it? I think you pointed out 7 or 8 transactions involving mostly Russians. You got to start asking yourself, is it a cultural thing?
That's an interesting question, but, I mean, you could say that it's not, because it's pretty well known that Marc Bergevin did try very hard and, in fact, did match what Dallas was giving Radulov.
Radulov, yeah.
And so there's the fact that he did want Radulov back, and he also wanted and had budget, and hence the $8.5 million left in cap space, he had budgeted to re-sign Andrei Markov. So the anti-Russian sentiment isn't really true when it comes to the Canadiens and Marc Bergevin, because they did want Radulov and Markov back. It's just that Bergevin lost. He lost in those negotiations.
Look, there can be no doubting the fact that what the Toronto Maple Leafs did in defeating the Los Angeles Kings 3-2 the other night was once again draw yet another line in the sand when it comes to their contending credibility. The Kings were the only team left in the National Hockey League without a regulation loss, and so it was only fitting that the Toronto Maple Leafs would saddle them with their first L of the season, especially in lieu of Drew Doughty's controversial comments before the game, where he basically intimated the fact that he felt the Toronto Maple Leafs weren't quite yet a contender. Well, Drew, guess what? This team has the depth and the fortitude to compete for 60 minutes on any ice surface in any rink in the NHL. But let's be clear about one thing, though. I'm still not sold on Freddie Anderson. As much as I love the heroic effort he put in last night in making the saves and bumping up his save percentage, he still hasn't shown me that he can get the job done on breakaways. I think he's now 3 for his last 13, which is especially deflating considering the fact that this is a team that will need to rely on him at various points in the season. And although I'm absolutely confident he can give them quality starts night in, night out, I've yet to be sold that we can use his name in the same breath as the upper echelon goalies. And until that happens, the Toronto Maple are very much a contender, but not necessarily one for the Stanley Cup.
So the Alex Galchenyuk trade rumors are heating up again, and a lot of this doesn't make sense to me. Last week it was the Pittsburgh Penguins, the Stanley Cup defending champion Pittsburgh Penguins, the two-time defending Stanley Cup champion Pittsburgh Penguins, expressing interest in Alex Galchenyuk as a third-line center. Behind, obviously, Crosby and Malkin. So how does a defending Stanley Cup champion team have interest in Alex Galchenyuk as a center when the 30th overall team, currently riding a 7-game losing streak, currently struggling for offense, currently struggling in every category, shooting percentage, power plays, anything offensively related, have zero interest in Galchenyuk generating offense for them at the center ice position? Right now they have Galchenyuk buried on the fourth line. Just doesn't make sense to me. Now there's Rangers rumors coming about, being traded to the Rangers for either Zuccarello or Chris Kreider, of all people. And again, where will the Rangers use him? At center ice. So there's at least two other NHL teams who think Galchenyuk can be playing center for them, and one of them is the defending Stanley Cup champion. It just doesn't make sense to me. I don't know what's going on right now, and it just hurts my brain to think about it anymore.
Our guest tonight on Habs Fan vs. Leafs Fan is a premier hockey contributor to Sportsnet, RDS, Vice Sports, and the Sporting News NHL. He's also the host of the Andrew Berkshire podcast. Andrew Berkshire is on HBL. Andrew, thanks for joining the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's my pleasure.
This was, needless to say, a really rough week for the Montreal Canadiens, Andrew. And quite frankly, I'm wondering if you've ever seen the divide between fan reaction and team expectations as wide as it's been this year between the Habs and the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Oh, man, I don't think so. I mean, there have been times where the Leafs have had a hot start and been ahead of the Habs, even though you expect the Canadiens to be better over the last several years, right? But usually the Leafs kind of peter out a little bit in the Randy Carlyle era, and the Canadiens catch their rhythm. But this is an interesting one, to say the least. I definitely thought coming into the season, even though I'm not like necessarily approving of the direction that Marc Bergevin is taking the team, I thought there would be one more year before the Leafs like ascended above the Canadiens. You know, like I knew it was going to happen because you can see the direction of both franchises, the age of the star players, stuff like that. I mean, you just watch Austin Matthews play for 30 seconds and you're like, my God, this is going to be scary real soon. So like, I thought there was going to be another year. Apparently I was very wrong, because I think the Maple Leafs are already significantly better than the Canadiens. And I think even if the records weren't, you know, polar opposites, you would still be saying that just based on how the two teams are playing. Working for Sportlogic, which is a private data company, I'm privy to seeing much better analytics than what's publicly out there in terms of like really key tracking in like how you create offense, things like that. And the Toronto Maple Leafs are far and away the best offensive team in the NHL, and it's really not close, especially at even strength. And the Canadiens are, you know, middle of the pack, slightly below middle of the pack, and it looks like they're the worst right now because their finishing ability has just been terrible. But the gap between them, even if the Canadiens get back up to middle of the pack, is so severe that I don't think Carey Price at his best makes up for that gap defensively. You know what I mean? And I don't think the Canadiens are a particularly great defensive team, as much as people want to pretend that Shea Weber and Carl Alzner are great shutdown defensemen. They're great at specific things that are no longer as important in hockey as they were 10 to 15 years ago. So it's one of those things where the Canadiens' analysis of what's important is a generation behind what it should be, whereas the Leafs are very cutting edge. And that like gap in management and tracking and just overall vision has changed everything completely within a couple of seasons. I mean, it doesn't hurt that they got Austin Matthews as well, but you can see that the Maple Leafs approach this very well. It's not just Austin Matthews on that team. They have an extremely deep group of forwards and, you know, some underrated players on defense too. I think Jake Gardner is a lot better than he gets credit for.
Everything you just said, Andrew, made me very, very sad. And Andrew, you talked about the defensive system. Last year, when Claude Julien came in, they introduced the swarm system, so to speak, that Julien kind of referred it to as. And this year, as we can see, Montreal's been terrible defensively. Is it purely just the personnel, like the defense that Bergevin has put into place, or is it Julien's system? Has that changed? Or is it simply it's a slumping Carey Price? What do you think it is?
It's unfortunately a combination of all three things. You know, Carey Price hasn't been what he's supposed to be, what you expect him to be, but he hasn't been, you know, an .880 save percentage bat. I don't think that's possible for him over a long period of time, or even, you know, 5-6 games. It's just not who he is. He's too good. Like, there's been a few things that he needs to improve on, and I have, like, complete and total faith that he will, because I know how hard Carey Price works and how dedicated he is to being the best. But the Canadiens have been really sloppy in their own end, and, you know, there's got to be some blame on Claude Julien. I think he's a fantastic coach, one of the best in the league, but clearly he didn't do a very good job preparing them this season because, you know, even going back to preseason, they have not played well as a team. You look at the way that they play, and it looks like, you know, 19 guys who are playing together for the very first time every game, to start every game, and it doesn't make sense. You know, most of these guys were here last year. They should have some sort of chemistry, but it just doesn't work. Now, is it that the Canadiens' roster construction is just so deeply flawed that this is the result? It's possible. You know, they've got too many guys on the back end that can't move the puck. They've got too many guys up front that are a bit too grindy for my liking. You know what I mean? Like, Andrew Shaw is a good player. Philippe Deneau is a good player. Paul Byron is a good player. But if you have all of those guys at the same time, you have too many of the same type of guys. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's not an indictment against any specific player. It's just that the types of players that they have don't work. And I feel like that combined with the lack of depth at center and, you know, Jonathan Drouin, you know, all the power to him for having such confidence and working so hard trying to be a center. He doesn't look like he's going to be a top center to me. I don't think he can be a matchup center for sure. Like, he's never going to be anywhere close to like a Patrice Bergeron, that kind of thing. So it just feels like there's too many weaknesses, and it's kind of death by a thousand cuts at the beginning of the season here. And at the same time, they've been super unlucky. Like, there have been so many goals, like in the game against the Maple Leafs, where JVR scored off the faceoff. Now, that was a bunch of dumb luck bounces, and it just happened to go right to JVR's stick. Price wasn't set for it, and it goes in. And that same goal happened in another game, you know, and there's goals that bumped off of three players and beat Carey Price. It's just like all this stuff is happening at the same time, and they can't finish at the same time. So it's like this cataclysmic group of problems hitting all at once, making them look far worse than they actually are. But it's also a deeply flawed team.
So, more Andrew, more sadness. But I'll tell you something. Maybe I'm going to switch gears on us here, because I'm thinking that with all these negative stats attributed to the Habs, you know, they can't score. The special teams are terrible. Slow starts by really highly paid players that we don't need to mention. The team still, though, somehow is a top five core in the league. And they're regarded as an above-average team in possession play and five-on-five. Does that give you reason to believe that things will get better a lot sooner rather than later?
Well, I think we have to look at context as well. I know that Mike Kelly, who I actually kind of work with a little bit, tossed out that the Canadiens are a top-five Corsi team. Well, adjusted for score, they're actually 11th. So they're still okay, but not great. And they've had trouble generating quality shots. They're starting to get a lot of quality shots against them, high danger scoring chances, that sort of thing. There's some positives to take from that positive shot differential. That does mean that they are not like consistently being outplayed in terms of like what zone they're stuck in or anything like that. But, you know, you've got to have, I think, a bit more going for you than just one statistic for me to say, okay, this is a team that's going to turn around and get it into the playoffs. I think the Canadiens aren't this bad. They're not going to, unless they decide that they need to blow it up, they're not going to finish in a lottery position. But in order to actually make the playoffs, I think they're going to have to overachieve for the rest of the year. So in order to do that, you know, it can't just be about Corsi. As much as, you know, I'm a believer in Corsi, especially score-adjusted Corsi, I think once you get to the 20-game mark, you've got a pretty good idea of where teams are headed. And the Canadiens have been unlucky this year. Carey Price is not going to stop 88% of the shots the rest of the year. He's going to stop a lot more than that. But you've got to have some scoring chances going your way. You've got to not have extremely high turnover rates in your own zone and in the neutral zone. You've just got to have more. And I can look at enough stats where the Canadiens are in the bottom half of the league so far this year where I'm thinking something's broken here. And unless it turns around like in the next two games, they've got to make a change, whether that's just a cosmetic change where they, you know, swap out some depth players, fine. But I have to tell you, I don't think that the center line that they have is enough to get them into the playoffs from where they're currently situated. If they would have started out better, you know, like I'd believe that they could make the playoffs, but the fact that they're still like they're in this situation and still they're like, no, let's not ever try Alex Galchenyuk as a center. And I understand that Galchenyuk's struggling, but man, Galchenyuk and Drouin in the middle looks a lot better than Drouin and Plekanec or Drouin and Deneau. You know, you've got to get some offense coming from the middle of the ice, and you've got to be able to take some risks, you know, and that's been the Canadiens' problem for a really long time, is they're very risk-averse. I mean, look who they traded away for Shea Weber, you know, that was all about risk and personality clashes and all that BS. When you're a good manager, you can deal with people who don't get along. You know, it's hockey. It's a locker room. It's not, you know, a kumbaya circle. These guys are here to play a sport, not be best friends. So that kind of stuff, it just tells me that the team isn't committed to doing the hard things. You know, they want everything to be easy and have everybody get along and fit together. But sometimes you've got to go with talent over just the conservative approach. And unless the Canadiens are willing to do that, I think this start to the season is so poor that it's pretty much impossible to recover from.
You mentioned talent, Andrew, and you also just mentioned Alex Galchenyuk. What's going to happen to him? Is he going to turn it around in a Montreal Canadiens uniform, or will we be seeing him in a different uniform very shortly?
Well, I mean, this is a tough one because I think that if it were just Marc Bergevin's call, Galchenyuk would be gone. From what I've heard from various insiders, Claude Julien wants Alex Galchenyuk to stay because he doesn't want to be seen as the guy who drives away elite talent like what happened with Tyler Seguin. That wasn't Claude Julien's decision, and a lot of people seem to attribute it to him. So, like, people think that Claude Julien didn't trust Tyler Seguin, but he did play him on the top line, like, from the moment he broke into the NHL, essentially, right? So he had to trust him a certain amount. Tyler Seguin had some good years with the Bruins. So I don't think that's very fair for Claude Julien. But at the same time, Julien has to show a bit more trust to Galchenyuk, and that includes trying him up the middle. And, you know, the Canadiens have to try some positive reinforcement. So I think that Galchenyuk stays with the Canadiens this year simply because they've torpedoed his value so badly that I don't think they'd be able to get fair value in a trade. And the coach wants him to stay, and they need that scoring depth. But long term, I don't know. It's really tough because it looks really dark right now. You know, like, it doesn't seem like Galchenyuk loves being there as much as, you know, if I were him at the same time, I wouldn't. I would have requested a trade by now. You know, you look back in the last couple of years and how many times Marc Bergevin has come out and said publicly that he wanted to draft Morgan Rielly. Like, there's no reason to say that, you know, when the guy's still on your team. So there's some odd stuff going on with Galchenyuk between him and management. So I don't know. It's so tough to answer that question.
It truly is a tale of two cities, isn't it? And when I think of all the trade rumors that are swirling above the city, the dark clouds that Montreal fans are now looking at when it comes to Bergevin and what the next moves might be, Andrew, is there a legitimate fear that in his desperation that Marc Bergevin might lose his cool and pull the trigger on a trade that fans will regret?
Well, I mean, he already did that. He already did it once. I wouldn't be surprised if he did it again. I think part of the problem with guys like Marc Bergevin, who is not stupid, he's just a hockey man through and through, is that sometimes you get an idea in your mind and you can't be objective about it anymore. And that idea happened with P.K. Subban. It was P.K. Subban's fault that they lost that season because he was too risky and he was, you know, not listening to the coaching staff. When really, if you watch back at that lost season with Carey Price out, P.K. Subban was their MVP by, you know, massive amounts. And he was trying to get them in the playoffs. And I remember a lot of people in media freaking out when, I don't know if you remember, when P.K. Subban scored a goal from center ice against Columbus.
He celebrated.
He celebrated, right? And everyone was like, oh, why is he celebrating that goal? Why is he, you know, showboating on that goal? And then you look back at it, that goal tied the game 2-2. The Canadiens ended up losing that game 5-2. And that was a back-to-back against Columbus. Subban had the flu. The Canadiens scored 4 goals in those back-to-back games. Subban was involved in all 4 points. and he was the scapegoat. You know, it's stuff like that that just, it doesn't make any sense, but yet here we are. And, you know, you've got that idea in your head that it's his fault and you can't shake it. So you just remove him for a player that everybody likes and is safe. And that's Shea Weber, who is great, but he's not PK Subban. And, you know, you said A Tale of Two Cities before. I think what's going on with Alex Galchenyuk, it's a great example of what Toronto got right. Because the same stuff, similar anyway, was happening with Nazem Kadri a few years ago. You know, he was a pariah in Toronto for a while. And, oh, why isn't he making the team? And he was stuck in the American Hockey League. And I think it was Dallas Eakin said that he was fat. And, you know, all these problems. And how come he can't score? And he's shooting from low percentage areas. And then all of a sudden, Nazem Kadri comes out last season, and he's playing extraordinarily tough minutes, toughest minutes in the NHL last season, actually. And he scored, I believe he scored 30, didn't he?
He did.
Yes, he did. Yep.
You know, and he's a great player, you know, and all of a sudden he's part of that core that's probably going to end up winning a Stanley Cup for Toronto. And it was just patience and finding the right role for the guy. And the Canadiens haven't been willing to do that with their young players. So maybe that changes because they're forced to, but I don't see it happening as of yet.
Andrew, with Mark Bergevin, you've looked at, you know, we've seen him acquire Steve Ott. He's out of the NHL, retired. Dwight King's in the KHL. Andreas Martinsson, I think he's in the AHL. And now a guy like Alex Hemsky, who essentially a lot of people are predicting will be waived very shortly. A lot of the stuff that Bergevin is touching isn't turning into gold. What do you think the future holds for Bergevin? You said he's probably going to stay the year, but do you see anything longer than that?
I guess it really, that depends on the team's performance, right? Like, going into the season, I thought, you know, if they go out in the first round, he's probably in trouble. And now I'm like, man, he's in trouble right now. I still don't think that they'll get rid of him during the season unless, you know, he pulls a panic trade like Gauthier did back in the day and they realize that they can't trust him to move pieces at the deadline. So maybe if that happens, he'll be gone earlier. But I think that he gets this year to try to save himself. The Alex Hemsky thing, that was a worthwhile bet, I think, because you look at Alex Hemsky the last couple of years in Dallas, and yeah, he was injured a lot, but, you know, he was a good player, solid defensively. This start of this season, I don't know what happened to him. I mean, maybe it was just how much time he missed last year, but the penalties are terrible. His lack of awareness is unbelievable, and he just doesn't seem like he's hustling. You know, he just doesn't seem like he wants to be there. So maybe Hemsky, in his own mind, is kind of done, or, you know, it was just too long of a time off for him last year after the surgery that he's not ready to play yet. But it's interesting to me that Hemsky gets more chances to screw up than a guy like Galchenyuk does, who has a much higher ceiling. But that tells you everything you need to know about the Montreal Canadiens right now.
I'm just curious, is that a cultural element on a previous observation you made, Andrew, when it comes to the way that Alex Galchenyuk is being treated in Montreal and comparing that to what Nazem Kadri had to endure here in Toronto? Is that maybe a cultural element, considering that Russian players haven't exactly been sticking in Montreal?
Yeah, I don't know, because, you know, there was a lot made this year of kind of like a Russian exodus in Montreal. You know, Alexei Emelin, the Canadiens didn't actually want to lose him. They just couldn't protect him in the expansion draft, so that wasn't really a choice that they made. I know Mark Bergevin desperately wanted to keep Alex Radulov, but he didn't want to give him extra terms, so he screwed up that negotiation. And the Andrei Markov thing, I mean, man, I can't explain that. When Markov went down and lowered his ask to 1 year, and then Mark Bergevin signed Mark Streit instead and decided that was a competent replacement, I don't know what goes through your head to think that. It just blows my mind, but I really don't think the nationality had much to do with it. I think with Alex Galchenyuk, it's more, you know, a young player that they have trouble dealing with. This organization for a fairly long time has had trouble dealing with young players, corralling them or getting them to think the proper way or you know, being accepting of their attitudes even. You know, like, Nathan Beaulieu is not a problem player, but they didn't like his attitude very much, you know, and they were public about that when he was sent down to the AHL. They didn't think that he tried hard enough or, you know, little things that bother them. But at the same time, you know, a competent team knows how to manage those personalities, and the Canadiens just haven't been able to do that.
With Jonathan Drouin, Andrew, is it, I don't know if I'm maybe too early to jump the gun on this as it is only 8 games, but does he have a long leash in terms of being a center for the Montreal Canadiens? I mean, he has the poor faceoff numbers, and his defensive coverage in the defensive zone has been, you know, spotty at times. Traditionally, Montreal likes to, you know, punish people who can't perform in those areas, speaking of Galchenyuk. Does Drouin have that longer leash?
Yeah, I think he does for two reasons. One is they believe Jonathan Drouin is like a borderline elite player, which, you know, I think he's very good, but elite is a big tag for me. I don't think he's at that threshold. And the other thing is he's a big acquisition. You know, they basically, their entire summer was pushing Jonathan Drouin as like the next thing, right? So it would be very embarrassing for them to go around for months all summer saying Jonathan Drouin is going to be their new number one center, and then by the end of October he's playing on the wing. It wouldn't look good for management. So sometimes you live with those mistakes, because to not would make you look even worse somehow. You know, like it's a little bit about PR. And I do think that Jonathan Drouin has adapted to center better than I thought he would. He does work pretty hard on the back check. His defensive zone coverage is improving a little bit, but it's just like every single mistake that the Canadians have made, they've allowed a goal on. So like it's extra emphasis on all those defensive miscues. I think he's probably going to be okay. He's just more like a second line center than a first line center, which is the same deal with Alex Galchenyuk. You know, like he has problems defensively as well. So it's one of those things where if they would just give them both a bit of trust, you could roll two solid lines and, you know, maybe work that way. But, you know, they're giving enough trust and encouragement to Jonathan Drouin that I believe that he will make a success out of it, because he's already a confident guy. And when you've got everyone in your corner, it's a lot easier to deal with the hard times.
Well, Andrew, listen, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on our show for the very first time. I'm sure our listening audience are curious about what you're up to and how they can find you on social media. Give us an idea of what's cooking on your end these days.
All right, so usually I write about 5 articles a week, 3 for Sportsnet, 1 for RDS, and 1 for the Sporting News. And once in a while, I'll sprinkle in an article for Vice Sports, who I'm with on a freelance basis. I've got the podcast that I'll start getting back to now that it's been a month getting used to the newborn. And you can always find me on Twitter at Andrew Berkshire. And I think on Facebook, it's Andrew Berkshire Page. That's my official page where I post all of my articles. So, like, you know, Twitter, you've got to leaf through all of my crappy tweets. On Facebook, it'll just be a feed of articles.
You've been listening to a true five-tool sports journalist, hockey guru, and Mr. Mom, Andrew Berkshire. Thanks for joining us on this episode of Habs Famers and Leafs.
Thanks for having me, guys. It was a pleasure.